And we're in Mark chapter 14, and we're starting at verse 12. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when it was customary to sacrifice a Passover lamb, Jesus' disciples asked him, "What do you want? Where do you want us to go and make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" So he sent two of his disciples, telling them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. Say to the owner of the house he enters, 'The teacher asks, where is my guest room, where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? He'll show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there.' The disciples left, went into the city and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared the Passover. When evening came, Jesus arrived with the 12. While they were reclining at the table eating, he said, 'Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me, the one who is eating with me.' They were saddened, and one by one they said to him, 'Surely you don't mean me.' 'It's one of the 12, he replied, 'one who dips bread into the bowl with me. The Son of Man will go just as it is written about him. But woe to that man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better for him if he had not been born.' And while they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, 'Take, eat, this is my body.' Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. 'This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many,' he said to them. 'Truly I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God.' And when he had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives." In one of my favourite books by a guy called Donald Miller, it's a rather off-the-wall American kind of bloke, but he's good. And in his book called Blue Like Jazz, he says about a man he knew called Alan, who went around the country asking ministry leaders questions. So he went to successful churches and asked the pastors what they were doing and so on. And he said it sounded very boring, except for one visit he made to a man named Bill Bright, the president of a big ministry. Bill Bright died a couple of years ago. Alan said he was a big man, full of life, who listened without shifting his eyes. Alan asked a few questions, but as a final question, he asked Dr. Bright what Jesus meant to him. Alan said Dr. Bright could not answer the question. He said Dr. Bright just started to cry. He sat there in his big chair, behind his big desk, and he wept. And when Alan told me that story, I wondered what it was like to love Jesus that way. I wondered quite honestly if that Bill Bright guy was just nuts, or if he really knew Jesus in a personal way, so well that he would cry at the very mention of his name. I knew then that I would like to know Jesus like that, with my heart, not just my head. So we come to this place this morning because we love Jesus and we want to love him more. And no matter how much we love him, we could always love him more because of what he did for us. And we begin by coming to this place to apologise to God. In one of the books I read, there's a lovely man who says he goes to church every Sunday to profoundly apologise for his behaviour. I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. To turn up in church, not full of ourselves. I know we all scrubbed up with our best clothes and our Sunday face on, but we need to come here with that heart saying, "I need to apologise to God because I really haven't got it right every time this week." I mean, after all, we are part of the human race, and the human race is flawed. There's a deep flaw through the character of the human race, and none of us are immune to that. Somebody once said that his view of human nature is that he looks both ways when he crosses a one-way street. I mean, this is the race, after all, that throws stones at fire engines. And if that is the human nature, we're not exempt. We too are the kind of people who mess things up. One of my favourite authors is a Christian author called Francis Spufford. He talks about the human propensity to mess things up. Actually, used a rather stronger word than mess, but I've had to change it. The human propensity to mess things up. He says that is what defines the human race. No matter how good the planet is, we find a way to mess it up. No matter how calm, peaceful things are, we find a way to mess it up. No matter how quiet and calm and in good order things are, we find a way to mess it up. No matter that there's 1,000 right things to say, we seem to find the wrong thing to say at the wrong moment. That human propensity to mess things up. No matter how good and peaceful and well things are in our household, we find a way to say the wrong things and annoy our spouse. The human propensity to mess things up. So we come to the communion service to say sorry. And that's what we have to do. It's absolutely right that we should do that. But we also come to receive forgiveness. And this is one of my favourite quotes. John and Des will know I used to quote this frequently in Penrath, in Bangor, whenever I took communion service. I'd find a way of getting this in because it's great. And you'll hear it from me again, I'm sure. It's by a Christian therapist, a psychiatrist called John White. And he tells us about a man called Howard who was being treated for serious depression and mental illness. And he said that for him, the most significant problem went back to World War II. He had avoided enlisting, yet many of his friends had gone, and some of them had been killed. And this was still weighing on him heavily many decades after. So what about forgiveness? I asked him. Oh, I want it so bad, he said. What's your religion? Russian Orthodox. And what does your priest say about how you get to be forgiven? I don't often go. If you did go to church and if you did go to confession, why would God forgive you? Because Christ died. He shed his blood. So? But I'm too bad for that. Now, unaccountably, says John White, I grew angry. No logical reason, it just happened. What do you mean you're too bad? His voice was rising like my own. I don't deserve ever to be forgiven. You're darn right you don't. He looked up at me surprised. I can't be a hypocrite. I got to make amends. It may be hard to believe, but I found my anger increasing. And who do you think you are to say Christ's death was not enough for you? Who are you to feel you must add your miserable pittance to the great gift God offers you? Is his sacrifice not good enough for the likes of you? We continued to stare at each other. And suddenly, he began both to cry and to pray at once. I wish I could remember his exact words. There's something indescribably refreshing about the first real prayer a man prays, especially when he doesn't know proper prayer talk. As nearly as I can recall, he said something like this. God, I didn't know. I'm real sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. More sobs, tears, running nose. I passed him a box of Kleenex. God, thank you. It's amazing. I didn't know it worked like that. I thought, but God, I don't know much. Gee, God, I don't know how to say it. Thank you. Thanks an awful lot. Gee, God, thank you. I prayed, my normal fluency a little hampered by his emotion while he mopped up his face with a Kleenex. His eyes were shining as he took my hand. Thanks, Doc. Thanks a lot. How come nobody ever told me before? During the following week, I refrained from doing more than bid him good morning. But the notes on his chart at the end of the first week read, remarkable improvement. No longer seems depressed. They're here to receive forgiveness from God. We're here to receive his blessing. There's a 19th century hymn, which we never sing anymore. It's probably past its sell-by date, but there's one verse which is lovely. It's by Frances Ridley Havergal. You probably have heard of her. And she wrote this in the verse of the song. Nothing to pay. Yes, nothing to pay. Jesus has cleared all the debt away, blotted it out with his bleeding hand, free and forgiven and loved you stand. Hear the voice of Jesus say, verily, thou hast nothing to pay. Paid is the debt, and the debt are free. Now I ask thee, lovest thou me? It's a lovely old hymn. Yeah, it's old-fashioned. So it's probably as well to move on, sing something new. But it's a beautiful sentiment. Nothing to pay. We're free from the debt. And we're here to remember, because we forget early. We're here to confess, we're here to receive forgiveness, and we're here to remember because we forget. By tomorrow morning, you will have forgotten what I was speaking about this morning. I will have probably forgotten I was here. And we'll have moved on, because we forget so easily. Tomorrow morning, I'll be complaining and moaning as usual. I'll have forgotten all the thanksgiving I had to give today. And I'll be back to my usual grumpy old man self. We forget. We do. We're human. It's part of the human condition. Charles Spurgeon, whom you know personally because his trowel is stuck there on the back wall, you look at every day, every Sunday as you go. And Charles of the trowel, when he laid the foundation stone, he said this, I met Jesus Christ. I looked at him and he looked at me and I was his forever. That's not a bad sentiment. I looked at Jesus, he looked at me, and I was his forever. Back in the day, when I was pastoring in Penrallt in Bangor, we had a lot of students. We had an evening service. And one, I think it was late March or beginning of April, two young student girls came in. I said, they all look young, my age now. They came into church, and they got there a bit early, so I slipped into the seats alongside them, introduced myself. I'd never seen them before. And I said, which church do you normally go to? And they said, oh, we don't go to church, but we just thought we should do church. I said, well, you're very welcome here, and hope you enjoy the service. And they stood there. Of course, they didn't know the songs. They didn't know when to stand up, sit down. But they managed bravely. And at the end of the service, back in those days, we had a thing called Faith Cafe, basically where we served food to the students. And believe me, when you serve food to the students, they come in their droves. And I said, well, why don't you come? We've got food, soup and bread. You don't have to stay all, you just stay as long as you want. And sit at a table, chat to folk, and then you can leave when you like. But that Sunday, the way God works is just wonderful. The girl who was president, one of the presidents of the Christian Union, before the service, she came up to me and said, "Peter, hope you don't mind. I just really feel led by God. I want to give my story, my testimony tonight of how I met Jesus." A faith cafe. Yeah, I didn't turn that one down. But it was that night, you know. So anyway, I said, I can't remember her name, so-and-so. She just wants to tell you her story. And she got up and she just spoke. Oh, I wish you could have heard it. It's so simple, beautiful, from the heart, of how she'd grown up in a decent home and she'd gone to church a few times, then she drifted away, then she came to be a student, and she realised she needed to know Jesus, and she just got involved in the church, and that was it. And she found Jesus. And I was watching these two girls, listening to her, and honestly, they were on the edge of their seats. Like their eyes were out on stalks, you know, wow. And she just, it could have been them she was talking about. She just spoke straight into their situation. It was wonderful to watch God at work, you know, especially when you don't have to do anything, just watch, you know. And she talked to them, and they sat at the table, and the other students, they were lovely and friendly. And they wandered home. And next week they came back. And I found them in the porch filling out prayer cards, asking for prayer for things. I thought, this is going well. But here's my problem. They were final year students coming up to their final exams, and term finishes beginning in May for final year students. I knew I had no time to get them involved on an alpha course or any kind of course. All I could do was leave it to God. But I took them down the coffee shop to chat to them. I had a nickname, the coffee shop pastor. And I just spent, the coffee shop's gone bust since I left. I can't imagine why. And I left them, I talked to them and we talked and just left them to it. Come the end of term, they were regular as clockwork in the services and clearly just involved, and they were singing the hymns and everything. So I took them for coffee again. And I sat down and I said, "Look, it must have been really difficult for you the first time you walked into our church." And they said, "Why? What do you mean?" I said, "Well, wasn't it strange? All those hymns, all what was going on, you weren't used to any of it. Must have been difficult." And Emma, she looked at me. She said, "Yeah, Peter, it was strange. But once I realised that Jesus died on the cross for my sins, it was easy." I thought, yeah. What can you say? Sometimes somebody's answer takes your breath away. Yeah, it was easy once you realised that Jesus died on the cross for your sins. It all became easy. If only it was always that easy, I thought to myself. I didn't say that to her. And I had to leave it. And then back, she moved away, got a job somewhere. Come September, I had a lovely card from a no-return address. So I wasn't able to follow it up. Just saying, "Thank you, Peter. I found a church. I'm involved in the church. I'm in a home group." And there she was, following Jesus. "It was easy," she said. "Once I realised that Jesus died on the cross for my sins and rose from the dead, it was easy." It is easy. It really is that easy. But you've got to believe. You've got to take Jesus into your heart at that point. You just can't turn away. And that's why we remember this morning.